This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It's Thursday, welcome to it, my friend. 6 minutes after the hour. Steve Gruber Show, the hotline number, 888-900-9966, if you'd like to join the conversation. My next guest is busy because it's campaign season, and basically when the big names come to town, he's often there on the Republican side for sure. I've seen him at a few events recently, and he's out there talking to people all the time. He seems to be working, just a hardworking individual. I think that's safe to say. Attorney General Bill Schuette on the program. Attorney General, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you. And as that song says, we listen to you when you talk to us.
And I appreciate that. And, you know, I do see, you know, it's going to be a busy time for you. I mean, if there were just three or four Republican candidates, it wouldn't be so bad, but there's like 25 of them. So I seem to see you at a lot of these events when they come to town to look for support in Michigan, which they're going to need, I think Republicans are, if they intend to recapture the White House in 2016. So you're out there quite a bit.
Well, you know, I do have a lot on my plate. We have a top flight team at the Department of Attorney General that, you know, the women and men who work so hard for the citizens of Michigan, whether it's consumer protection or public safety, you know, that's my first responsibility. And then, you know, second to that is, you know, yeah, politics enters into some of this, and there's a big responsibility also to make sure, from my perspective as a Republican, that we have a Republican that takes the White House in 2016. So that takes some of my time as well. I saw you at that Jeb Bush thing, and you did a great job as MC, Steve. That was a fun night.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you're out there a lot. And you're right. There's a lot on your plate. And one of the things that the reason we have you here this morning to start anyhow are House Bills 4419 and 4420. These would end mandatory two-year sentences for first-time felony firearm charges, which typically force or extend prison stays for those convicted of other crimes. Now, when it comes to mandatory sentencing, I've never been a big fan because I think oftentimes there are mitigating circumstances and factors. And honestly, this is why you have a judge on the bench, is to determine, you know, what is appropriate for a defendant if they're convicted and you know, what the circumstances of the crime are. I mean, I've always been of the opinion that if you just have mandatory sentencing, you could put a laptop computer up there because what difference does it make? But in this particular case, talking about gun crimes, you have some strong opinions here, sir. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I would disagree with you politely. You know, you don't have a criminal justice system that's on cruise control or autopilot. You always need to have people on the front lines making decisions. And quite frankly, prosecutors across the state, whether they're Democrat or Republican, this is not about politics, but it's about public safety. And the first responsibility of government is public safety. And we have a mandatory sentence that, in a minimum 2 years, when you commit a crime with a gun, and that's all about public safety. When you read some of the papers in the free press, stories in the free press of the news of people committing crimes with guns, the message ought to be that, listen, you commit a crime with a gun, you're going to have a minimum 2 years. And prosecutors across the state, you know, whether it's, you know, David Layton, who's a great friend of mine and a prosecutor from Genesee County, you know, he is helping lead the charge here, along with a guy named Vic Fitz, who is head of the Prosecuting Attorneys Association across Michigan. And they are very strongly opposed to these efforts to take the heart out and emasculate the Bill Van Regenmorter Crime Victims Act. We want to send a very strong message to both the criminals that if you commit a crime with a gun, you're going to be up, and we're going to continue to have you behind bars. And we need to give comfort to the victims. Let's not forget them. We can't forget victims. So that when you're attacked, assaulted, or your home's invaded, you got to make sure that those criminals know that if you do that, you're going to go behind bars.
And I perfectly understand your point of view here. And you know, maybe we don't see eye to eye on this exactly, but There are others
out
there.
That's all right.
There.
You know, if you and I agree on 95% of the thing, that's about as good as the best man in my wedding. So that's all right.
I'd say we're pretty good there, yeah. There are some others. Kurt Heise, for example, Republican from Plymouth Township, who put these laws out there, said they're really serious about what the governor calls smart justice. And then I read from Judge Robert Colombo, the chief judge of the Wayne County Circuit Court. He also says this brings back discretion to the bench. So these are two that, and these are voices that are on the other side of the aisle from you on this one. And generally speaking, you agree and have pretty good conversation with these folks all over the state in your position as attorney general and well thought up in that position. But you do have some conflicts, some disagreements here. And so I don't
and you know.
Know
that's that, you know, and that's okay. And the problem is that if you change this 2-year minimum mandatory sentence, when you commit a crime with a gun, you're providing uncertainty to the victims. That's the problem. And so I'm with the prosecutors here, prosecutors across the state of Michigan who are opposed to this initiative. And, hey, I like Heise. Kurt's a good guy and a good representative. I just disagree with him on this. Here's the key thing. On this whole issue of criminal justice reform, we need to make sure the public safety is not endangered. And number two, we need to respect the victims. And number three, let's wring out efficiencies in the system by running our prison system more efficiently instead of just simply closing prisons. We've closed 20 prisons and camps in the past years, and we haven't seen a significant enough dent in the cost of the correction system. Now, if you really wanted to save costs, you could, you know, open the doors and close all the prisons. And you know that's the wrong approach. So, and 70% of the people in prisons today are felons with a violent crime. So this is not something you just put on autopilot. I think you need to have parole boards that exercise their discretion, and you need to have minimum sentences to protect people who live in their homes and want security in their neighborhoods.
Yeah,
that's my viewpoint.
Yeah, turn them all loose. Well, there's one guy from Michigan said turn them all loose, Michael Moore. Yeah, he said just open the prisons, turn them loose. I don't think we agree with that point of view. I think that's
No. And I use that as an example to show how, you know, we need to sure that we have a strong criminal justice system, but we ought to make sure we run it efficiently. The taxpayers deserve that.
So what do you think? Obviously, you have a great relationship with Governor Rick Snyder and so forth. If this happened to make it to his desk, this House bills 4419, 4420, any idea of how he might come down on this issue?
You know, we have a great governor, and the governor and I have a very strong relationship. You know, we're on the same team. There'll be some times we might have nuances or differences, but the fact is there's a process that will occur here, and you know, the legislative process, there'll be hearings, and everybody weighs in, and this ought to be about persuasion. It ought to be about, you know, civil discussion, and you know, you can disagree without being disagreeable, and you know, that's what we need in a state, where you can have civil discussion. There might be differences of opinions, but you know what, that's okay, and where it ends up, it ends up. So we need more discussion and discourse and less anger and pointing fingers and, you know,
and on that point,
hair-raising stuff. You know, that's my take.
I couldn't agree with you more. Time, you know, just because you hold an opinion, you don't say, well, that's it. We're not going to listen to anything you have to say.
Right.
And it goes on often. I agree with you that.
Just because Heise and I have a difference on this bill doesn't mean we won't go out and have a beer. You know, so it's, you know, it's all right.
There you go. Attorney General Bill Schuette, everybody here on the program. Sir, I got to run, but I appreciate your time. I'm sure we'll talk soon.
All right, take care. See
you. There you have it. Attorney General Bill Schuette of Michigan, and these bills, 4419, 4420, making their way through. We'll keep an eye on them and see if mandatory sentencing stays in place for gun crimes or it gets moved to the back of the line. 14 after on the Steve Gruber Show.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
After the hour on this Thursday morning, Congressman Tim Walberg joining us this morning, as he does most Thursdays. Congressman, welcome to the program, of course.
Good to be back with you.
Well, you know, the big thing here on the radar for a lot of folks is this Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it's unusual to me, and maybe you can help me here. I know that there's this secret room, I guess, at the Capitol somewhere where you have to sign in, sign a piece of paper that you agree not to divulge anything that's in the paperwork here before you're allowed to read it. You can't take any pictures or notes. Is this normal?
Yeah, it would be normal for certain intelligence issues on trade when there are negotiations going on, as in any type of mediation or trade effort. You try to keep things under wrap for just basically the people that are negotiating, so then get out and cause a bigger challenge in trying to come to some conclusion. However, that's why TPA is the bill of necessity this week, and that we'll be working on. TPP and TTIP, which is the European trade proposal that is being worked on, aren't even up for consideration, and that will come after TPA.
All right, help me with here. We got TPP and TTIP and TP. What's TPA that we're working on this week? Just to kind of keep everybody's heads from swimming here.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important we have talks like this and shows that open up the opportunity for explanation, because it does get confusion even for those of us that are here in it. There are trade agreements, and then there is a authority that's being working on. For the past 50 years, all presidents have had an authority to go and negotiate trade with other countries. The TPA is that authority that we will give to this president, like other presidents have had, but we will have structure in it that says to the president, you are the one who will negotiate your office, your administration, but we expect, as representatives of the people, that you would negotiate along these lines. And so when you color in the lines on trade, here's the pattern you follow. You bring it back to us after you've developed your TPP or TTIP or any other trade agreement. You bring it back to Congress. Then there are 60 days where the Congress, all 535 members, and Steve Gruber and anyone else in this country, the world in fact, can go online and read the exact language of the trade agreement that you have negotiated. It will not be consummated until we say yes, or if we say no, it means you go back to the drawing board and attempt to work out an agreement again that fits within the lines that we've given you.
When it comes to the Trans-Pacific Partnership specifically, and the thing that no private citizen has seen, members of Congress, have you read it, sir?
I've not read it yet, and again, the reason why I will say that openly is because it's not up for consideration. TPA will give it life. TPA will give it structure. TPA will give a requirement that when a Trans-Pacific Partnership or a European partnership is developed, it must come back. At that point in time, it is a document that is truly worth reading because it has standing. Right now, there is no standing for us to do anything about TPP. TPA must be there first. So there are trade agreements that will have a vote by Congress and oversight by the American people in the process, and there is a TPA, Trade Promotion Authority, that is the structure by which we will control this administration in how they negotiate a trade agreement. And that's what's up this week, and that's something that the general public can read. I've emailed out that document to a number of constituents who have asked for it to take a look at it as well. But that's a document that people like Ted Cruz, Steve King, and Congressman McClintock, Paul Ryan, and others, including myself, support, and we'll be voting on that tomorrow. And that's simply to say, Mr. President, this is what we expect you to do relative to currency manipulation, relative to immigration, relative to you name it.
My understanding is from people that, you know, from reading a lot, is that immigration, a lot of these things are included in this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is confusing to us out here who are not allowed to read or understand what's in the document. But I want to go back to something you said to me the last time we were together on the program, because it struck a nerve with me and a few other folks. And we were talking about food labeling here as part of the trade agreements and basically banning the labeling of food so that I wouldn't know if my steak came from Kansas or Cambodia. You said you supported that last time you were here. If you could explain that a little more in detail, because I find that confusing.
And I'm glad you brought it up. I wanted to bring it up myself because we voted on the bill last night, the COOL bill, the Country of Origin Labeling Bill. WTO, World Trade Organization, which governs trade all around and also gives gives a latitude for our negotiation with other countries like Canada, came out that says in the instances of our labeling and the requirements we put on for our meats, beef, pork, poultry, that it violates trade policy. Now, whether we like it or not, that meant that Canada was going to start to put some restrictions and tariffs further on our meat, our poultry, that we will transport and trade to Canada, which is huge.
But as a consumer, I want to know where, you know, I want to support Michigan beef and Michigan chicken, for example. I want to know where things originate from.
Well, it's nothing. There's no problem with them saying this is a product of the United States, but to put it out further and disrupt the trade that we have, for instance, the Farm Bureau members that were in my office last night, and more will be today, they saw this as an absolute necessary requirement to fix that cool problem, that country of origin labeling problem, so that they could have ready and free access to export our meat, our Michigan meat, to Canada and other parts of the world without restriction.
Yeah, I still find it confusing. Now, hold on right there. We're up against a break here with Congressman Tim Walberg. Sir, hold one second. I'd like to ask you one other question off the air. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump-starting your day with the news that matters.
33 after the hour. Welcome back to the program on this Thursday. It's the Steve Gruber Show. The hotline number, 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. Going to the hotline now. Glenn is on the line in Dansville, Michigan this morning. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Morning, Steve. I find it fascinating that 5-10 years ago when people were talking about a new world order or one world order, that they're called kooks and tinfoil hat crowd and any other pejorative thing they can think of. And yet, I think we see that developing right now.
Well, you know, you're looking at this, and I agree with you, and the congressman will be back on the line here in a minute. I was able to talk him to come back, Congressman Walberg, because let me tell you something. This whole labeling thing, it's not, I don't think that it's a big barrier to put on, you know, whether your steak came from Cambodia or Kansas. I don't think that's a big barrier. And I don't know, maybe I'm mistaken, but, you know, when it comes to issues of national security, yes, we go into a private room and you don't discuss what goes on there. But for a trade policy thing, I thought normally that legislation was always published and available for the public to look at as it was going through, whether or not, you know, anybody else did, but it was always there.
Yeah, and I think I've heard mention now of businesses having to answer to world courts, not U.S. courts or state or local courts, but to world courts. And what sense does that make for us as a nation to give that authority to them?
Well, we've all heard the same rumors, Glenn, so I'm going to ask the congressman about that. I appreciate you checking in. The phone number here, 888-900-9966. Congressman Tim Walberg. Back on the line with us now. And Congressman Glenn there voicing the concern of things that we've all read online about if you violate a trade policy of this TPP or something else, then instead of going to a U.S. court, you could be taken to what is in effect a United Nations tribunal to sort out the trade dispute. Is there any truth to that?
No, that's not the truth. WTO, World Trade Organization, is an overriding organization that kind of acts as a referee between trading countries. It works generally in our benefit. In this case, in violation of WTO requirements, it enabled over $3 million of additional tariffs to be put on Michigan, for instance. Michigan meats, poultry, beef, pork, that would be shipped to Canada, et cetera, which would put us at a tremendous disadvantage. Farmers didn't want that. I mean, they can still, in the country, we can still package and put on the fact that it's produced in Michigan or produced in Indiana or produced in Ohio. But this enables us to continue pushing our products into the foreign market. And that's why... In fact, all of agriculture lined up behind this and saying, let's fix it. It was only relative to those three entities. It wasn't everything else. And so this this saves us over $3 million of.
Okay, well, fair enough. Tariffs. But why do we have to involve ourselves in the Trans-Pacific Partnership to solve a labeling issue with Canada?
Well, Trans-Pacific Partnership isn't with Canada. TPP, that will be with Asian countries. It is negotiated. And to get back to Glenn's concern and your concern again, let me put it this way. If you were negotiating your multi-million dollar contract, maybe it's true. I hope it's true for you with the station.
That'd be nice.
Until it was decided and signed, you and the station would probably want to keep those negotiations pretty quiet. The
fair
same
point,
is going
but,
on. The same is going on with this negotiation with TPP and TTIP, which is the European trade agreement that is being worked on.
The key difference, Congressman, in fairness,
it's a negotiation that must have some type of security, that we're not bringing multiple parties who have nothing to play into it to distract.
But in fairness,
TPA is what we want in order to make sure that the negotiation in its finality is brought back to the light of day before it is accepted or rejected. And that's what TPA does. Again, it is not a trade agreement. That's TPP or TTIP. It is a trade authority that tells the president what we expect of him in negotiations, whether, as I said, whether it's with immigration issues, whether it's with tariff issues, whether it's with labeling issues, you name it, that has to be worked out according to the authority that we give to the president, and that ultimately will decide in that 60-day period where everybody, including Steve Gruber and all your listeners, will have a chance to look at it as well, including myself, before I give it an up vote or a down vote.
Okay, but in fairness, the problem with your example of me and the station working on a multi-million-dollar deal, which would be nice, but the problem is I'm not an elected official. The corporation here is a private, it's a for-profit private corporation. It's not a public government entity answerable to the people, which in this case it is. So there's where I find it unusual.
I don't debate that, but it's how you do good negotiations. There's no way that we could do a deal with 535 members of Congress all doing the trade negotiations. It wouldn't work. You'd never get to conclusion, and ultimately other players would win the day. In this case, if America isn't in deep in the process of really leading trade negotiations, then China will be, Russia will be, and other countries that we frankly don't want to see be the leaders in trade. We're competing with them now, and we're competing with some like China on an unlevel playing field. There are other countries in the world that do not want to trade with China in the sense that China will be the big dog telling them how they do it. They'd rather have America be that big dog because, as they've told me when I've met with some of them in other countries, they said, at least we can trust America. And that's the policy. So, boy, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this because, frankly, a lot of us have got our hair on fire about TPP.
Well, that's true.
And it's not there yet. It's not there.
Well, it's true
TPA
because here's
the thing.
People don't trust Barack Obama.
And will give, ultimately, the light of day for the American people and their representatives in Congress to see what's there and say, Mr. President, you did good.
People have their hair on fire. Hold on,
you didn't make it on this one. Go back to the table because we're not approving it.
People have their hair on fire, though, Congressman, because Barack Obama pushed through Obamacare in secrecy, much to the chagrin of you and all other Republicans who are screaming bloody murder with your hair on fire. And then here this goes back behind closed doors with this, and it seems like a double standard. All of a sudden, the Republicans are all on board with Barack Obama while the Democrats are opposing him. It's a very odd.
It is odd. It is truly
situation.
Odd. But, conservatives have always been traitors. Traitors, not traitors. Traitors. Free traders, but fair traders. And that's where I sit as well. And that's why I want to be part of that negotiations at the proper time in saying, number one, at the offset, Mr. President, this is what we expect. These are the lines you have to draw within. Now bring it back to us. We'll look and see how well you've done in drawing in those lines. And if you've done well, we'll approve it in that 60-day period. If not, we'll send it back. And as far as the authority that's being given, for 50 years, we've given all presidents, Republicans and Democrats, this basic same authority. This will be a little more stringent in saying, here are some more specifics on issues that we haven't dealt with in the past, like immigration, like currency manipulation, others that we expect you to to deal with strongly. So this is a good tool. I still don't trust the president. He's disappointed me many times already, but it's a process that we have to work through.
There you have it, everybody. Congressman Tim Walberg. Congressman, thank you for your time and trying to explain it to us. I'm sure we'll do more of that in the days ahead.
I look forward to it.
There you have it. 41 after the hour on the Steve Gruber Show. I just made it clear as mud for you. So you see the fine work, clear as mud on a Thursday.
Michigan's radio program of record is The Steve Gruber Show. Here is Steve Gruber.
We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher.
Welcome back to The Steve Gruber Show. It's 45 after the hour on this Thursday. The phone number to call, 888-900-9966. You can become part of the conversation. We applaud common sense, of course. We're going to take a little break, though. My head hurts a little bit after all those... that conversation, all those letters, and I'm a little confused. And so, you know, we're going to talk about some nice things. We're talking about good stories in Michigan for a moment, building homes and building your dream home, because this is the time of year that all over the state, of course, you have the home builders associations doing their parade of homes. And I think that one of the big ones is in and around Lansing, the capital city, because so many people come to Lansing for a variety of reasons. And then, you know, they have the chance here to look at some of the great homes that are out there, and it's going on right now, if I'm not mistaken. Cindy Kozlowski here, the CEO of the Home Builders Association of Greater Lansing, to talk about the Parade of Homes and some of the things that are new and exciting. Welcome to the program, Cindy.
Well, thank you for having us on. I appreciate it.
Well, glad to have you. So, all right, let's talk about some of the new innovations out there or some of the things that you're seeing. You say, wow, I got to have that in my kitchen, or that's the coolest thing I've ever seen in a garage, or some of the things that have caught your attention.
Yeah, there's been some beautiful things to see. Definitely a great time to go out and look at all the new stuff. One of the things I was most impressed with is just the difference in flooring. That's just been really unique this year. I've seen some really neat things. Kitchen fixtures are amazing. Just some of the things they've done in the larger scale kitchens, it's just amazing to me how a kitchen can truly take over your whole home and be like the hub of the whole house.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, the center of the house, and that's the way I think a house should be designed, with a kitchen too, opens up to the great room and so forth, and it's all space that moves back and forth. I also think that a house with young kids like my own ought to have like some sort of a polished concrete floor that I can just squeegee off and start over every day.
I love that you say that, because actually a few of our homes have the polished concrete floor in the lower level, which I think is amazing, because once you put your kids down there, whether they're teenagers or whatever age, it's just nice to know that every time you go down there, if you know, you're not going to see some nasty spill on the carpet. It's just simple to clean up.
Exactly. You know, here's the thing. I don't think carpet belongs. You know, I used to see this. I used to scratch my head. Why would anybody ever put carpet in a kitchen? Because to me, I mean, that's just inviting disaster. And the same thing for the finished lower level. If you're going to put the kids down there, you're inviting disaster, because you're going to go down there, and just like you said, you know, the milkshake, the rock and rye or whatever is going to be upside down the carpet. You're going to be going, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
And instead, with the concrete, man, you just get out the squeegee, you wash it out, and away you go.
And you're done. You know, hard surfaces throughout the whole home are really coming into play. I really feel like you see that in a lot of homes where people just want something that's easy. You know, it's very good for if you have pets and things like that. I mean, it keeps it clean, and I think that it really helps.
Well, exactly. So how many homes are out there on the parade this time? I mean, and this does go on all over the state, around the country, of course, but I do think that the parade here in Lansing gets a lot more attention for the reasons I cited. A lot of people come to the state capitol for a variety of reasons, end up with a little bit of extra time. They can go out and check out some of these things that we're talking about. How many homes are on parade this year?
This year we have 16 new homes and 2 remodel projects, and it's nice because they vary in size and price and area, so you really have an opportunity to go out and look at a whole wide range of homes. And I think that's important for the Parade of Homes, to offer something for everyone. You know, not everybody is going to do that $1 million home. Of course, everybody wants to see those because those are fabulous and, you know, you dream big, and there are people that are building those homes. But I also think it's important to have it scaled, so there's a lot of opportunity to look at every type of price point, and I'm glad that our parade brings that.
I guess the other thing, you know, the bigger picture, you know, that extends statewide here, obviously Michigan had a tough go for 10, 12 years. I think the recession set in early, lasted longer. It was like the long, cold winter financially in Michigan, but now you do see some new homes going up of different sizes, like you mentioned, or the remodeling jobs going forward because people finally have some extra money in their pockets. So I guess, do you find it encouraging the economic temperature right now?
Yeah, that's very it's very encouraging, and obviously as permits continue to rise. But a gauge for a lot of us is the parade of homes and traffic. The last weekend, opening weekend, was just fabulous. And the interesting piece is the number of people viewing the homes that are truly building a new home. So that's always encouraging as well. And our builders love to see that, and they feel like they're getting a good handle on what the economy is doing. Our biggest issue now is just finding the workers. Skilled trades, you know, developing our workforce is a big issue for us, and we're doing our best to get out there with a grassroots campaign and just remind kids that there's an opportunity in construction and a good living to be made.
Well, sure, if you had the whole pool of employees, capable, skilled people, dry up there for a handful of years, and now that things are starting to pick up speed and momentum again, well, we need finished carpenters. We need, quality carpenters. We need guys that can do this polished concrete. You know, it takes a group of people to come back into the marketplace.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's just, again, it's not going to happen overnight, but just reminding, kids and young adults and even parents of their kids when you're talking to them, not everyone wants to go out and get the four-year degree and do that. And you can do that in the construction management programs, but there's a lot of great careers in skilled trades, and I think that it's a good idea to just take a look. You have some good options out there, and it's important that we grow that workforce.
Cindy, I could not agree with that more. We're on the line with Cindy Kozlowski, CEO of the Home Builders Association of Greater Lansing, because at 2:00 in the morning, when your toilet doesn't work, who is the most important person in the world? And that is the plumber. I guarantee you, mama is not happy if the toilet's not working at 2:00 a.m. and that phone is going to ring and the plumber's going to come and you're going to pay him extra money to be there. So skilled trades are extremely important.
That's a great example.
Exactly. And great careers we made. And, if you're willing to work hard and roll up your sleeves, there's a lot to happen out there. Where can people find out a little more information, Cindy, real quickly?
At our website, hbalansing.com, you can purchase your tickets for the parade at any local MSU-FCU location. They're our sponsor for the 6 year. Great partnership with them. Obviously, they have a great plan for construction loans and home improvement loans, so it's been a great fit.
And there you go. Cindy Kozlowski, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And speaking of building and so forth, this part of the program brought to you by AmericanMetalRoofs.com. AmericanMetalRoofs.com. If you're going to build that dream house, put on the dream roof. AmericanMetalRoofs.com. I'm telling you, it's the one roof you'll buy, the last roof you'll buy, the best roof you will ever buy. AmericanMetalRoofs.com, bringing you this part of the Steve Gruber Show.